This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Carrie Miller. This hour, the recount wrangling continues. The state canvassing board meets later today, and they're expected to declare that Al Franken has emerged as the leader of the U.S. Senate recount. That comes after a weekend spent opening previously rejected absentee ballots and a final count Saturday afternoon that put Franken ahead with 225 votes. But the story doesn't end here. Norm Coleman's lawyers have indicated that they're preparing a lawsuit that will move the recount into court. More on that in a minute. In the meantime, when the new Congress is sworn in tomorrow in Washington, Minnesota will be represented by just one senator, not two. Norm Coleman's term expired at noon on Saturday. We're going to talk this hour about the potential court battle that's coming and the political fallout if and when a new senator is finally declared. But we're going to begin with the latest developments in the recount, the canvassing board action over the weekend, and where it goes from here. Mark Ritchie is Minnesota Secretary of State, and he joins us from his office in St. Paul. And Secretary Ritchie, a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your great coverage of this history in the making.
Oh, we appreciate your help with that. And Minnesota Public Radio's political reporter Mark Zdechlik is also here with me in the studio. Mark, good to have you here.
Always a pleasure to talk about the recount, Carrie.
For our listeners, if you have questions about where we are in the recount process and where we go from here, this is a chance to get your questions answered. 800-242-2828. If you're listening in the metro area, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on Send a Question. Again, questions about the recount, where we're going from here, some questions about the court issues. We're going to address that a bit later. 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Secretary of State Ritchie, the canvassing board meets at 2:30 today. What are you going to do?
We have to approve minutes from our prior meeting. Then we will hear reports from the state recount director about the results of the counting and allocation of the ballots, which occurred over the weekend. And then we will hear a final report that will consolidate the results from the local recount activities, the activities of the state canvassing board in regards to the 6,665 challenge ballots, and the results from this weekend's counting of those wrongly rejected absentee ballot. That consolidated report will give us the official numbers on the totals from November 4th, the election night results.
And that official count will show that as of this morning, Al Franken leads with 225 votes. Is that right?
As of this morning, that's what it looks like it will say, and that's what we anticipate going into the meeting this afternoon.
What does the board then do with that information?
Well, that information is the basis by which we sign a certification of the results. That triggers a seven-day waiting period, and after seven calendar days, the governor can issue the certificate of election. I co-sign that. Or within that seven-day period, the losing candidate can ask for an election contest, in which case the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would appoint three district court judges here in the Ramsey County District Court.
Is it possible, Mr. Secretary, that the canvassing board could be reconvened at some point to consider these additional ballots if the state Supreme Court would decide, as the Coleman campaign wishes, to do that? Would you potentially come back in to consider that?
The Supreme Court can order anything it chooses.
So it's possible that you might have to come back in to take a look at these ballots?
If the Supreme Court so ordered, absolutely.
Have you got a sense, just quickly before we turn to Mark Zdechlik here, of when the state Supreme Court is going to make a decision on that?
Well, they have not said anything, done anything, made any particular indication of their interest in picking up this question. And so there's no way for us to crystal ball something where we have really no signals whatsoever.
All right. Mark Zdechlik, is that the next key legal decision that those of you who have been watching, you know, every chapter turn on this recount are awaiting?
Well, I suppose it could be considered that, but in some respects, the canvassing board works as a canvassing board, and what it does, I'm told, is sort of outside of actions by attorneys for one campaign or another. Certainly the canvassing board would take direction very literally from the Minnesota Supreme Court. There's an expectation that if the High Court doesn't do something by later this morning, by noon or one or something like that, that the canvassing board will just proceed ahead with this agenda to finalize things. And this is a really big day in the recount because they would be certifying the numbers.
But I am asking you specifically about the state Supreme Court decision. This is that Coleman has gone in to ask to that other rejected absentee ballots, is that right, be included here?
Yeah, upwards of 650 that the Coleman campaign believes should have been considered. In many cases, these ballots were brought up at local regional meetings where the campaigns and local election officials would go through ballots and agree which were to go on to the Secretary of State's office and actually be counted. The Coleman campaign maintains, however, that these need more consideration, and they're certainly hoping that the High Court will side with them on that. It's one of many, many, many legal moves that have transpired since this all began. I don't know if it's the key ruling that we're waiting for next. I think that really what is going to be interesting is to see when the count is certified, what this legal contest that is all but certain to come from the Coleman campaign is going to lay out as what is flawed with the recount. And that's what I'm waiting for.
We'll talk about that a bit later in the hour with Guy Charles. Just a question again to you on the campaigns. What are they saying over the weekend now that that Al Franken has taken the lead with 225 votes?
Well, the Coleman rhetoric, I'll call it rhetoric from the Coleman campaign, has been talking about the Franken false lead, and that that they're very close to, you know, going ahead with a contest. And they have talked about in the past problems they have with the recount that they say leaves it flawed. There were the missing ballots from the Minneapolis precinct, allegedly missing ballots that the Coleman campaign says ended up netting the Franken campaign, you know, 45, 46 votes or something like that. There's this issue of twice counted ballots that the Coleman campaign says leaves the process of the recount flawed and nets for Franken 100 votes. And then there are also these 650 plus ballots that were, it says, wrongly rejected absentees that belong in the count. So they're on several fronts. The Coleman campaign saying that, hey, this recount is not valid. The lead that Al Franken has right now is a false lead.
Mr. Secretary, do you consider after you've come in today to certify the results of this recount, do you consider that if there is no state Supreme Court decision telling you to reconvene to consider some of these other ballots, that your work is done?
Well, of course, only in respect to this race, yes, it would be done. The State Canvassing Board, of course, meets after every election, and we will continue to work throughout the future. But in terms of this particular race, and this would be our last action in regards to the elections held on November 4th, our work would be completed. And we believe we've been extremely careful at every step in the process to, within Minnesota law and within the orders from the state Supreme Court that have come down, this is the absolute most humanly possible accurate outcome in terms of the count. And we feel really good about the fact that almost every decision at the local level, at the state canvassing board level, they've all been made unanimously. Almost, I think, 95% of the decisions made on the challenge ballots themselves were unanimous in 95% of the cases. So we feel very good about the process and feel very satisfied that within the law, we've done everything possible to be absolutely precise about what Minnesota voters did on November 4th.
Let's take some calls here. We're talking this morning, if you've just tuned in to Mid-Morning, with Secretary of State Mark Ritchie. Mark Zdechlik, Minnesota Public Radio's political correspondent, is here in the studio with us, and we're taking stock of what happened with the U.S. Senate recount over the weekend. As you probably know, the canvassing board met over the weekend. They reviewed those improperly rejected absentee ballots, and then they counted them at the end of the count. DFL Senate candidate Al Franken emerged with a 225-vote lead. Later in the hour, we talk about what the court battle portends and some of the political fallout that may follow. 800-242-2828. If you have questions about the recount, in the Metro, 651-227-6000. And if you're online this morning, minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on send a question. I'll get to some of these online questions as well in a moment. To Fred in Minneapolis. Hi, Fred. You're up first on your question.
Yes, the recount process has been very interesting. And, you know, we've learned lots of details like the challenge ballots having X's and circles and stuff instead of the filled-in circles. But the improperly rejected absentee ballots, the media has said very little about why they were rejected improperly, what, you know, how they were marked wrong or whatever. I'm wondering if you could sketch out some of the reasons they were originally improperly rejected and then later approved. And also, what was the distribution of those? Were they some everywhere? There were lots of them.
Fred, are you talking specifically about the absentee?
Correct.
Okay. Why were the absentees initially rejected? Mr. Secretary, to you first.
Yes. Well, we doubled the number of people voting absentee between 2006 and 2008. So we had nearly 300,000 people, about 10% roughly, voting absentee. Of those 300,000, about 12,000 were rejected. Of the 12,000 that were rejected, there are really only four reasons that are permissible for rejecting an absentee ballot that's from a valid legal Minnesota voter. If it's late, lack of registration, a signature doesn't match on the application for the absentee ballot, or some problem with the witness, a signature missing, that kind of thing. So the Coleman campaign went to the state Supreme Court and asked that those wrongly rejected absentee ballots be considered as part of the recount. The Supreme Court ordered all local election officials to go through the 12,000 rejected absentee ballots to determine if any of them were wrongly rejected. They found about 1,350, and many of those were simply errors. In one case, the county auditor election official just said, "We goofed." In some cases, they weren't even considered. They got in so late. In some cases, the absentee ballots, which are normally delivered to the local precinct for counting at the end of the day, got delivered to one precinct over. They were sent to the wrong precinct. So those 1,350 voters did everything absolutely right, but there were errors made on the clerical or administrative side, and they were wrongly rejected. We call those errors. And those 1,300 and some wrongly rejected absentee ballots, the Supreme Court gave both campaigns the right to block any of those, and they both chose to block 200. So about 400 of those 1,350 wrongly rejected absentee ballots were not forwarded for the count over the weekend, only 950 roughly.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how we get down to the number of the 950.
And Mark, a question to you. There was speculation going into this weekend's work by the canvassing board that as they counted these wrongly rejected absentee ballots, that Al Franken would develop an advantage here from the votes. That is what happened. Do we know why? I mean, what were they able, media organizations like the Star Tribune were able to say they believed in an analysis that he would gain votes. Why?
Bottom line, you just look at where the absentees are coming from. And if they're from areas that are, this is very general, speaking broad generalizations, but there is an L in the southwestern corner of Minnesota that's generally pretty strong Republican territory. Hennepin County, on the other hand, and Ramsey County in the urban areas are pretty strong Democratic areas. So you just look at where those absentees are coming from, and that gives you a sense as to it's more likely than not that that's going to go Senator Coleman's way in that area, or it would go Al Franken's way in a particular area. It's just kind of the history of the area.
Got it. To the phones here to Karen in Grand Marais. Hi, Karen. Thanks for waiting. Question?
Yeah. After all of this careful counting, and with 3 million Minnesotans voting, our total numbers for Franken and Coleman still fall within the margin of error. And so isn't it statistically inconclusive who our winner is? And won't it, by Minnesota state law, come down to a coin toss?
Mr. Secretary, what about that?
We don't have anything about statistical margin of error, and we don't really run our elections on the basis of statistical analysis. But if the certified results of an election are exactly the same, then we do toss a coin, and we did that in Farmington just a few months ago on a close election. And so the caller is absolutely correct that when there is a tie,
a real
tie, we
flip
a coin. But we don't choose our elected officials with pre-election polling or with post-election statistical analysis. We go by the votes themselves, and that's what the recount is all about.
Mark, it is worth noting that it is truly extraordinary, and I think we lose sight of that because we're watching every new part of the recount happen. But in out of 2.9 million votes in this race, that it would come down this close again.
It's absolutely historic, and this is our second statewide recount this year, and we just hope we don't have a lot of these because they are, take a tremendous amount of work at the local level and, of course, at the state level as well. But it does give us a chance to put a microscope to our system and to see places where we can improve this great system we have. And the fact that we've doubled the number of people voting absentee tells us that this is something Minnesotans are going to be doing. Our systems need to catch up to the people.
Right. Mark Zdechly, go ahead.
And, you know, the Secretary of State has been talking a lot about, you know, the legislative plans from his office and how some of these things might be changing based on the experiences of this time around, especially so many people voting absentee. But
right. One
wonders, in light of this question, too, if Minnesota might look at doing things the way some other states do, where you need to win by a certain percent. You know, you have to be up a half point or 1 point.
Georgia does this, right?
Correct. Yeah. And they actually experienced that this cycle, too. And
right.
I'm wondering if the Secretary of State has any thoughts about whether Minnesota ought to move in that direction so it's not just such a toss-up when it gets so close like that.
Mr. Secretary?
Sure. Well, these are two completely different questions. Whether all politicians should be elected by a majority, 50% plus one vote, is a question that's heavily debated in the conversations about ranked choice voting, instant runoff voting. Georgia, for example, has that system. But that's a completely different question than under whatever kind of rules you have. If an election is very close, should it be recounted by hand, whether you think it's 50% or 49 or whatever? And so I've been saying to folks that the Georgia system is interesting from the point of view of the candidate who wins, ultimately having received support from a majority of the citizens. But in Georgia, if they have a close runoff election, they must recount it just like we do. So I think these things sometimes get tossed together, and they're really apples and oranges. They're not the same question. Close elections happen under all circumstances. What Minnesota has is a great system for handling a close election on figuring out how the voters voted.
800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. And if you're online with us this morning, as I know a lot of you listen like that, you can send in your question, minnesotapublicradio.org, and click on send a question to Jim in Bloomington. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Question.
I'm wondering, when I was in the polling place, I initialed the mistake that I made. Why wouldn't that be counted as compared to these absentee ballots that they all have their entire name and address in that?
Mr. Secretary?
Yes, Stokes. State Canvassing Board discussed this, and we had a consistent policy of when a mistake was made and somebody fixed their mistake and then initialed it, kind of like people do on checks, this was not considered a mark for the purpose of identifying the ballot and therefore was accepted as a valid ballot and was counted just depending on how the person voted in that race. So but on an absentee ballot, the final ballot, there are no names, there are no identifying marks, it's completely secret, unless a person has on their own, written their name or somehow identified it. That happens occasionally in regular voting. It happens occasionally in absentee voting. But absentee ballots that are reviewed in the end are secret. The name of the person connected to the ballot is not known.
Mr. Secretary, to follow up on what you said a moment ago about our system being prepared for more absentee voters and assuming that there will be yet more in the coming elections, do you mean that more training needs to be done? Do you mean that more time needs to be given to voters who want to vote absentee? What are we looking at?
Well, three things come to mind quickly. One is some legislation to make the whole process less complicated. We did pass a couple years ago some mechanisms for early voting for no-excuse absentee. They got caught up in a great big veto, but, you know, that's the kind of idea that needs to come to the legislation to make it less complicated, simpler. Second thing, we need better training for our local and local election officials, our election judges, our poll workers, and of our voters.
So you mean specifically voters, on the absentees?
Yes.
Okay.
And third, we do need more time between the primary and the general election, because when we have a recount in a primary, it pushes everything back. And so those voters from Baghdad and Kuwait serving our nation, and those voters in other parts of the world whose ballots come back one day late, mm-hmm. or 2 days late, with those break my heart. They are properly rejected, but that doesn't make it right. So we do need to look at this terribly short time frame between the primary and the general and do something so that our soldiers and others who are overseas can actually vote in our elections here in this country.
Mr. Secretary, a pleasure to have you back on Mid-Morning, and I hope you'll join us again at some point. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Secretary of State Mark Ritchie with us this morning. Mark Zdechlik continues with us. He's been covering the recount as our political reporter. And Mark, a question here from John in Woodbury. Please explain the double-counted ballots. What's the extent of them? Does the Coleman campaign's argument have any merit? You take a deep breath when you talk about it.
Well, we heard a lot about this.
Lot
we have heard a lot about it from the Coleman campaign. And they maintain that in the hand recount, not the initial count, machine count, but in the hand recount, some ballots that were duplicate ballots ended up getting counted twice because they were unable to identify the original and duplicate and match them up. And the Coleman campaign claims that it has examples where it's looked at machine tallies and hand recount tallies and found very similar discrepancies that would basically give them about 120 to 130 ballots. And these are in areas where we were talking earlier, some regions you can kind of just say, well, that's a strong Democratic area or a strong Republican area. These happen to be in areas that are pretty strong Franken areas. And the Coleman campaign maintains that these duplicate ballot issues would net Franken upwards of 100 votes that he does not deserve. I think that people should know that when the Coleman campaign approached the Minnesota Supreme Court with this issue, the Supreme Court didn't say that the issue is without merit or anything like that. They just said it's not the venue, it's not the forum for the state canvassing board to take up something like this, because this would require really kind of investigatory work and that kind of thing to find out if indeed this did really happen.
So does that mean that that's something that might come up in any kind of a court battle?
Almost for sure. Yeah, that's what the Supreme Court even basically indicated. That's where something like that needs to be handled, not under the purview of the canvassing board.
Let me turn then to Guy Charles, who's going to talk to us a bit about what may be pending in any court action. He's a professor of law at the University of Minnesota Law School. He's currently on sabbatical at Duke, and he joins us this morning from his office at Duke. And Guy, good to have you back on the show.
Great to be back. Thank
I know you.
You
listened to the conversation this morning, and you've just heard Mark say that this issue that the Coleman campaign has brought up of double-counted ballots may be up for some kind of consideration in any kind of a court case. What else?
What else will be up for consideration?
Yeah.
Well, certainly two things, it seems to me, that are lead for consideration. The double-counted issue, as Mark talked about, and then secondly, this absentee ballot question as to whether a uniform standard was applied in counting all of the absentee ballots. This is what the Secretary of State was talking about earlier. To what extent were absentee ballots counted that weren't supposed to be counted, and to what extent were absentee ballots that were supposed to be counted not counted? And it seems to me those are the two leading issues for the Coleman campaign.
Now, let me ask you about when you say uniform standard, a judge would what be looking at the way this was conducted in these different counties and districts as the absentee ballots were reconsidered?
That's correct. So the Coleman campaign's argument is that you have Minnesota law provides four bases for rejecting an absentee ballot. And to the extent that a ballot was rejected outside of those four bases and mm-hmm. counties applied different rules mm-hmm. for rejecting those ballots, that is not a uniform standard for statewide election. And so their argument is going to be that counties applied different guidelines in deciding whether to accept or reject certain absentee ballots. And consequently, that's a violation of the equal protection of the laws.
Guy, when we talk about this moving into the courts, are we talking about a single judge reviewing and deciding on some of these questions that you've brought up? Would this be a multi-judge panel? Would it end up in federal court? What's your sense of that?
Well, there are two possibilities. So first of all, Minnesota law provides for an election contest. So within 7 days, and I'm sure this, if the Coleman campaign, if they are behind now, so it's likely that they are going to be behind after the Secretary of State has certified. So it's likely they're the ones who are going to do the election contest. They're going to find a petition, and it's going to be filed in Ramsey County. And the Supreme, the Chief Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court is going to appoint three judges, and those three judges are going to function as a trial court, and they are going to decide the issues that are brought by the Coleman camp with respect to this election. And once they have made, and they will find facts and they will apply the law, and then once they have made the decision, there might be an appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court. So that's one possibility and one track provided for by Minnesota law. Another option would be for the Coleman campaign to file a lawsuit in federal district court alleging a violation of more than likely the 14th Amendment equal protection of the laws. And this is where this absentee ballot issue comes in, because it provides the best basis for that challenge, as also this question of double counting. So if you're going to count if some votes are counted twice and others are only counted once, that also provides a basis for alleging a violation of the equal protection of
and
the law.
And Guy, do you have a sense of whether they would be discussing which venue might be most advantageous, whether this works better to be in federal court or whether this works better to be before a panel of judges?
I think assuredly they are discussing which venue might be more advantageous, especially if they're looking at the facts and seeing what is it that they have before them, what is their best case. They're also thinking about whether it is best to proceed on two fronts. If you remember the Florida proceedings, mm-hmm. What seems to be now ages and ages
2000.
Ago, in 2000, one of the things that happened is that you saw the Bush campaign proceed on two fronts, that there were lawsuits that were filed in federal court, and there were lawsuits that were filed in state court. And that's also a possibility, that you could file a lawsuit in federal district court, and you could file an election contest in state court. And sometimes the courts then will have to decide. The Franken campaign might say, okay, we want to petition one court to hold its proceedings so that the other court can go forward. And they would petition the court that they think they would have the best shot at. So a lot of legal strategy here will come into play.
Let me go back to the phones here to George in Minneapolis. Hi, George. Thanks for waiting. Your question.
Yeah, thank you. I understand the Supreme Court issued on December 18th the order for the absentee ballots issues, and the parties agreed in a protocol on the 24th that the local officials present the ballots by a certain time, but that then that both parties, after the December 29th meeting, could only present ballots, only present additional names that both parties agreed on. Do you know if that is the procedure?
Mark, what happened with that?
Well, this is interesting because we heard a lot about this. That was a week ago Monday, I believe, that we were talking about this, or last week. Today is Monday. And the Secretary of State had said that because the parties did not have agreement by 3 o'clock a week ago to bring additional wrongly rejected absentee ballots to the pile for consideration, adding on to those 1,300, roughly 1,350 that the local election officials have come up with, nothing could be added on. Then some of the wrongly rejected absentee ballot going through the sorting, that kind of thing, started happening, and there was for example, in Anoka, gridlock, the first day they had to do that. The local election officials sitting at a table, there are Coleman people on one side, Franken people on one side. They hold an absentee ballot up and say, should this be counted? And then they argue about it. Well, they stalled out because the Coleman people wanted to add all these additional ballots in. The Franken people did not want that. They came back the next day. They worked very expeditiously through those their portion at the Anoka counting facility of that 1350 identified by local officials. Then they actually considered 17 additional ones that the Coleman campaign wanted included. The Franken folks said right out of the chute that they would, you know, object to each and every one of them because they were out of order and didn't belong. But nonetheless, they did go through that process. So, and what ended up playing out there, and apparently at many, many other spots, is that the Coleman folks were actually able to at least bring these to the table, but they were summarily objected to by the Franken campaign, if that makes any sense
to
anyone.
No, it does. It's a good explanation. Right. Yes, it does. Thank you. Back to the phones here to Chris in Mound. Chris, you're an election judge, is that right?
Yes, I have been for a number of elections. And for the first time, I was a judge at the closing time. I was usually in the morning. And I was very impressed on how careful everyone was counting the ballots and getting them bagged up and sealed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I'd have caught the Secretary of State, but there's one thing that I noticed after the bags, or I can't remember bags or boxes, but they're sealed up with a plastic sleeve. And in that sleeve, we would put the tally of exactly what was in that package. And I couldn't help but notice that once they were sealed, that tally could be slipped right out. I thought it was odd that the punch hole was off to the side of the bag instead of in the middle, and I just was hoping that the Secretary of State could make sure that those seals were something that couldn't be tampered with in future elections.
Chris, you actually, though, bring up a question that I wanted to ask E. Charles about, which is when this is reviewed, whether it's by a federal court or by this panel of state judges, Gee, will they also be looking at some of the processes and reviewing some of the things that Chris has mentioned and some of the decision-making that was going on by election judges in different parts of the state?
So what will happen is that this is going to be fairly similar to a lawsuit. Whatever the parties bring to the attention of the judges is what the judges will focus on. So if the Coleman camp if they're the petitioners in the election contest, they will say, we are concerned about A, B, and C issues, and those are going to be the issues that are going to be focused on. Now, if the Franken campaign, they want to add C and D and E issues to it, those are the issues that are going to be focused on. So it's not going to be a broad-ranging analysis of everything that could possibly go wrong. It's going to be what the issues are that the parties bring before the court, what the facts are that they bring before the court. Those are the things that the court will focus on.
And Guy, a quick question about the timeline. Will these judges feel, under a certain pressure to get this done expeditiously, because, of course, Minnesota until then is going to be represented by just one senator?
I think they are going to feel under some pressure to decide these expeditiously. And one of the things that we all, as Minnesotans, ought to be proud of is I think all of the officials, the judges, the Supreme Court justices, the Secretary of State, I think everyone has been trying to be very careful, but also trying to get everything done as quickly as possible, given the stakes, given what is at stake here. So I do think that the judges will feel some need to proceed cautiously, but also expeditiously.
Mark, you want to add to that?
Well, just the whole notion that we in Minnesota won't have two senators. I don't know that that's necessarily settled. We do know that, as you mentioned on the way into the program, that Senator Coleman's first term expired on Saturday.
Right.
But there is a battle right now looking to shape up in Washington about what to do if the canvassing board meets this afternoon, certifies the recount as legitimate, and is done with the numbers, and has Al Franken up with 225 votes. There are some very prominent Democrats in Washington, D.C. in the Senate that say it's time to then bring Al Franken to the Senate, maybe seat him provisionally. And we're getting stuff last night. I have something sent to me in my email last night from Senator from Texas, John Cornyn, who's the chairman of the National Republican.
Who has objected to this, hasn't he?
Very much so. And they've made it pretty clear that they will not allow the Democrats to try to seat Al Franken, and that the seat should be open until this legal contest stuff gets resolved. And you wonder if that's going to be the big first fight of the new Congress And certainly the way these press releases are flying around Sunday night, you know, from the National Republican Senatorial Committee and then statements from the Democrats as well, I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion that, if Mr. Franken does actually come out certified as a having more votes in the recount, that he will be sitting on the sidelines. We don't know yet.
This will be something to bring up with Larry Jacobs when he joins us a bit later as we talk about the political fallout of this as well.
One interesting issue here, too, Gary, is that you've got the Burris over in Chicago who wants to be seated, but the Democrats don't want to seat him. And you have Franken, if he does get certified, who they want to seat, but the Republicans don't want him seated. So it's a very interesting question here as to both of these potential Democratic senators.
Well, let me bring Larry Jacobs in. I know he caught the last part of that conversation. He's at the University of Minnesota, where he teaches political science and is the director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Humphrey Institute. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Carrie.
What are you making of Mark Zdechlik telling us that he's getting Sunday night emails and press releases about this potential battle in the Senate about seating Al Franken, and then the complication of what's going on with Burris in Illinois? What do you make of all that?
I size this up as unlikely that Al Franken would get seated, and here's the reason. The argument that's being used with Burris, who said, by the way, that he's planning on going to Washington to be seated, is that he will literally need to have the signed certificate of election from the Secretary of State to be led on the floor of the U.S. Senate. So once the Democrats have stipulated that rule with regard to Burris, they've got to follow it for the U.S. Senate race, which would mean that you would need a certificate of election signed by the Secretary of State and the governor. And I just don't see that happening until the process has played itself out.
You don't see that happening here in Minnesota?
Nope.
Governor Pawlenty saying that he wouldn't sign it?
Well, I think he's been pretty clear that you know, the whole process needs to be played out, that the election is still up in the air and so forth. So I would not expect him to sign it until all, you know, possible avenues have been explored.
Larry, we've been talking with Guy Charles and Mark Zdechlik here about the next phase of this, which looks like it's headed to court. My question for you, then, is the credibility issue. We know what happened after 2000 when the Supreme Court decided Bush v. Gore. There are still many Democrats who believe that Bush was never really elected. Do those issues arise again if you have a panel of judges or a federal judge end up deciding the Senate race?
Well, I think it's a real possibility, and it's a concern for everybody. I do think Minnesota is not Florida. And the tremendous transparency of this process, the fact that the state canvassing board and other officials have been appointed by, you know, frankly, all three of our major political parties here in Minnesota, and the general nature of the recount and the possible contested election leads me to think that it will have a credible process. No doubt there will be enormous frustration on either side that loses.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people will accept this as a credible process.
So you don't think the losing side will continue to say it was illegitimate? I mean, this is a six-year term. There's a lot at stake.
There's a lot at stake, and I'm not saying no one will feel that way. I'm sure there will be a good number. But I think overall the sentiment is going to be relatively balanced, and people will appreciate that here in Minnesota, this has been a very careful process, and I think, frankly, shows some real kind of under-fire proven best-case practices that other states ought to look at.
It also has been a very transparent process, hasn't it? I mean, it seems to me like the voters of Minnesota have been able to watch this step by step, and most of this has been done in open meetings.
Exactly, and I think that was one of the problems in Florida. There seemed to be kind of, you know, backroom decisions, and people were kind of scratching their heads as how do the courts, whether it was in Florida or here or in Minnesota, or, you know, some of the county and election, local officials were making their decisions.
Mark, go ahead. Guy, go ahead, and then we'll go to Mark.
I would say one more issue to add to that, too, Carrie, is that the Minnesota judges at the federal level and also at the state level are extremely, extremely good, and they don't allow their partisanship or possible partisanship to step into the fray. They are very, very careful about that. These are very, very smart women and men, very, very thoughtful people, and you could see that in some of the opinions so far from the Minnesota Supreme Court, but at the federal level and the state level, these are officials who are really thinking about these issues and are going to be very careful to assure that the legitimacy is ensured in this process.
Mark, go ahead.
I think also part of the mix needs to be considered is how Senator Coleman will handle this. So this is all in play right now. So the people that he's hired to represent him are up and out with a lot of rhetoric and a lot of charges, and they look very certain to be, you know, preparing for an election contest. So it's to their benefit to try to have people kind of wondering if this process of the recount was flawed. Once that does move along and we get to another stage, and if it does turn out that Mr. Franken is certified the winner of the election and contests don't work out in court, Senator Coleman is a very popular politician. You have to remember, there are plenty of people that were close to the Bush administration that are now looking for other things to do that did not do nearly as well as he did in his reelection effort.
So and what are you saying? There might be some other job for him in Washington? Or
no, there might be some other elected elected office that he might want to pursue in Minnesota.
Well, and we've got a governor's race
that's
in 2010, correct. And who knows, right?
So I don't know to what extent he would want to play the role of a spoiler long-term on something like
that. Larry, that's a good point. The calculation that Senator Coleman has to make, if indeed he ends up contesting this, and as Mark had said, the contest does not turn on the arguments that he's making. He has to think about that.
I think you're right, and there are two key points here to think about with regard to whether Senator Coleman actually moves forward either with a contested election or moving to federal courts. One is he needs to see a realistic possibility that he will net at least 225 votes. Now, when you start looking around at the various possible areas that they might move in the legal front, you need to get to 225, and again, that's net. That means that whatever process is set up, the Franken people aren't going to be sitting there passively in the sidelines. They're going to be raising issues, and as we saw on Saturday when the absentee ballots were counted, there were a much higher proportion of Franken votes in there than we anticipated. That wasn't simply a function of where the votes came from. It had to do with the Obama campaign and its mobilization. Now, the second issue here is cash. It is very expensive. Campaigns have gone through over $4 million, most likely. And in the orbit of politics, fundraising for this recount contested election will become more difficult for Senator Coleman. He's got to make a decision about whether he's willing to run the risk of running into debt.
Guy, one last question for you before we let you go. I know there was a situation in, I think it was New Hampshire, that where there was a long court battle about a Senate race, and eventually the Senate declared that the seat was open. Do I have that right?
You know, I don't recall the specifics of that election. One of the things that is very interesting about Minnesota law on this issue is that Minnesota law provides that in a Senate election contest, the only thing that the court is to do is to decide which candidate had the most votes, and therefore to leave all other issues available and open for the Senate itself to decide. And so there's still the possibility, remote, but still a possibility that the Senate can play a role that is left open to the Senate by Minnesota law, that the trier of fact, the court can find facts, but leave all other issues for the Senate to decide, with the exception of which candidate had the most votes.
Guy, good to talk with you again this morning. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Guy Charles, professor of law at the U of M Law School, and he's currently on sabbatical at Duke, and we talked to him this morning in Raleigh, Durham. Larry, I want to come back to something that Mark brought up with this idea. You talked about how expensive it is to pursue this, and the Coleman campaign really has to assess what they would get out of it. But again, back to this issue of laying the foundation for any other future run, Senator Coleman has to be thinking about how he looks in the remainder of this process, doesn't he? If he's interested in a political future.
He does, and folks may remember back to 2000, where you had the charge that Al Gore was being a sore loser by going to court.
Right.
Now, I consider that to be, frankly, inappropriate. There are absolutely legitimate avenues here for Senator Coleman to pursue, but there is the broader kind of court of public opinion. Senator Coleman has had a remarkable career in public service. in St. Paul, now in the U.S. Senate, and I'm sure he wouldn't want to jeopardize that. So he's got a tough decision, and I don't consider it automatic that he would be going to court. He's got the kind of future political viability issue and this cost issue. I mean, this is a very expensive process, and with him falling behind and questions being raised about whether he can net the 225 votes given the available pool of possible votes he could pick up, it's a tough call, I think.
You know, Mark, I was reading what Fritz Knock has been saying in the media late last week and over the weekend. And to take Larry's point, though, it does seem like they were laying the foundation here for a court case and that they were fairly ready to move fairly quickly. What's your sense of that?
That's certainly what the way they're posturing and positioning with the language and things, the way they choose to say things.
Mm-hmm.
They will say that a voter has been damaged, for example, or something like that. They talk a lot about disenfranchisement and things like this. It just seems very clear from what the attorneys are saying that that's the route that they will most certainly take. But that's what they're doing, and they're positioning and posturing, and it's all I had no idea when this began, when we knew we were going to have this recount, all the efforts that would go into subjective kind of elements of this recount. To me, the votes, you count them, you recount them, you recount them again if you need to, and it's an objective process. 2.92 million people voted. Well, here's how they voted. Here's the ones that we can't tell how they voted. We're done now. But there have been so many efforts to try to spin this in
right.
various different directions. And now it has escalated to this national level, too. And it's just very interesting to me that this is the way this has played out.
Larry, tell me what you take from this as a political scientist who's watched every step along the way.
Well, I don't want to be Pollyannish about it, but I think it's been an excellent teaching moment. It has most definitely proven the point that every vote counts. And, people who are doing cartoons in their ballot, you know, they were subjected to some national, ridicule within Minnesota and around the country.
You mean the lizard people?
Lizard people. You know, it's good for David Letterman. But you know, clearly the decisions that the U.S. Senate is going to be making this term are enormous and could well have a huge impact on the course of this country's future.
Right.
Each vote has counted. I think the process has been largely a good one. And, you know, in a hotly contested, closely fought battle, we've had a process I think generally has stood up. I think the judges and the Secretary of State's office have conducted themselves in an exemplary manner.
Let me grab a quick call here from Mark in Rochester. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, two quick comments, if I could, on different issues. First
sure.
of all, I would be tremendously disappointed if either side prevents Minnesota from seating a senator. With the issues our country and our planet face today, and with a potential movement forward with the Obama administration, we need a full working Senate. So I'd be disappointed. That's the first point. Second is I'm a little concerned that we have discussion about potentially double-counted ballots without laying more of the foundation. It is just an accusation at this point.
Right, Mark. But it is probably going to be something that a judge will decide. So,
And it should, but in the meantime, the public needs to know that there should be evidence. For instance, if there was double counting in a precinct, you would expect at the end of the day more votes than the number of voters. Now, that has not been put forward as evidence by the Coleman campaign, nor is it alleged. So you need some evidence before just making an accusation of double counting and leaving that impression with the public that maybe there's something fishy here.
I'm tight on time here. I want to let Mark respond to that.
Well, I just say that when we do report this, we do try to couch it in the allegedly ballots that were allegedly counted twice. The Coleman campaign is claiming that. The Franken campaign does not believe that's the case. And this will be the work very likely for a court to look at and investigate.
Larry, we're also watching another seat in the U.S. Senate. We've talked about Illinois, and of course we've talked this hour about Minnesota, but this New York seat of Senator Clinton's that Caroline Kennedy has expressed interest in. Did she, as you watch the news coverage, does she seem to be emerging as the person who may be appointed by Patterson?
She may be appointed, but I would say the probability has dropped over the last 10 days.
Why?
Well, there's been a variety of questions raised. One is about her suitability. She's given some interviews where she's been very vague. There's been all this stuff about the I don't know tick. There's also, and I think more seriously, a number of issues that are getting a lot more play about other people who have been in line, kind of, you know, built up the record and the track experience. You know, Andrew Cuomo is mentioned. There are a number of people who are very active in New York politics. So I don't consider that a foregone conclusion. But this is a fundamental issue because the Democrats, who have a 58-seat majority in the Senate, you need 60 to override a filibuster. And like horseshoes, getting close really counts. Now, if they're down at 57 or 56 because they're not able to appoint in New York, Illinois, and possibly Minnesota, seeing how it plays out, this is very significant and clearly is having an impact already in the kind of stimulus package that the incoming Obama administration is talking about.
All right. We'll talk about more of that tomorrow morning at 9. Larry, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Glad to be with you.
Mark Zdechlik with us in the studio today. Mark, thank you. Good to have you in the studio.
Good to be here,
Come
Carrie.
Back, all right? And we'll update you on the news on the recount throughout the day. As we've mentioned, the Minnesota State Canvassing Board meeting at 2:30 this afternoon. News on the air and online throughout the day about the recount. You can find that at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. As I mentioned, we talk politics tomorrow morning as a new Congress is sworn in Washington and President-elect Obama gets down to work. He flew to Washington over the weekend. His children start school in D.C., and he's starting to settle in there. He's got a meeting on Wednesday with former presidents talking about his economic stimulus package with members of Congress. We're going to talk about all of that tomorrow morning at 9, and we'll get some news out of Chicago as to what's happening with Obama's Senate seat that he gave up when he was elected president, and the case against Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois. We've got a reporter for Chicago Public Radio who will join us for that. So that's tomorrow morning at 9, and then Tuesday at 10, intrepid Globetrotter Rudy Maxa is going to be in the studio with us. No news here that we have a global recession and that's affecting the travel industry, but I think Rudy will be here to say that there are still destinations to go to, especially now when you get in a good deal. So Rudy Maxa in the studio with us tomorrow at 10. And I want to let you know at 10 o'clock today, we talk with Yale pediatrician and professor Dr. Sid Spiesel about the year in medicine. And an amazing year it was. Remember the news that came out over the summer of the windpipe transplant, where tissue that was grown from the patient's own cells were used to transplant that windpipe. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the face transplant that took place later in the year. What's happening with stem cells? What's happening with a disease like malaria, where there have been both advances and setbacks? Dr. Spiesel with us at 10 o'clock as we talk about the year in medicine. I hope you'll join us as well. This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio.